everybody. Welcome back to Two Geeks at the Movies. I'm your co-host, Chris. And as always, I'm joined by my brother and co-host, Rob. What's up, Rob?
We're getting closer to Halloween. So exciting.
That's right. I forgot to say it was our spooky, scary Halloween month.
You don't even care anymore.
I don't.
I forgot it's Halloween and it's spooky.
Spooky and scary. It's a regular werewolf bar mitzvah around here.
Oh, I should show Maggie that.
So we were discussing what horror movies Rob should show his 4-year-old daughter. Apparently werewolf bar mitzvah falls into it.
Well, I'm running a little bit low on what's appropriate for a 4-year-old, and I was thinking the Thriller music video.
Oh yeah, that's not bad.
No.
I don't know. I think you're maybe cracking the seal on this a little early, but
maybe I'll start with Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
Have you found a horror movie to show her yet?
Have I found a horror movie?
Yes. Because we were talking about the house with the clock in its wall, like saying was maybe something for her, but even that seemed a little intense.
I'm glad I watched that one first, because I think it's a little too scary. And I think Reanimator would be a great place to start. It's mainly been like,
yeah,
she really likes Coraline and...
Oh, that's pretty good. That's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And does she like Nightmare Before Christmas?
She's obsessed with the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That one, Paranorman. Now I'm just giving out recommendations for young kids.
Yeah.
House with the Clock on Its Walls for kind of, I would say like 6, 7, 8-year-olds. It's probably appropriate. And
yeah, I was watching it tonight with my 8-year-old and he was just fine with it. So
yeah, it's a fun one. I like that movie.
Yeah, well, we're not doing anything so family friendly because Coraline doesn't have sexual assault in it, so let's talk about Reanimator.
Hold on, I'm gonna need to have a drink here.
Yeah, I should have had a drink before I watched this fucking movie. Reanimator, 1985, Stuart Gordon. Are we going to say classic? We'll say classic.
I would say cult horror classic.
Yeah. I had never seen this, and I knew what I was getting into, because there were certain aspects of it that get talked about a lot whenever Reanimator comes up. You'd seen it quite a bit. Or you've at least seen it in the past, right?
Yeah, I'd seen it quite a few times.
Okay.
And, I mean, that, I think, speaks to my feelings on the movie. I enjoy this movie a lot. But I was under the impression you had seen it before, so I'm kind of excited to talk to you about it. And I feel like maybe I'm going to be disappointed in your opinion of this movie.
Well... it's not great.
It's so much fun.
I understand the fun of it, and we'll get to all to what my issues with it are down the road here, but there's certainly some very troubling aspects of it. This was based on a story by H.P. Lovecraft.
It was.
I'm going to assume it's going to be loosely based.
Yes.
Okay.
The
what
central...
do you know about it?
So I've read it. I read it. It's been a while, but I read it after seeing the movie. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, having seen the movie first and having known kind of what Lovecraft was all about, I knew there was a lot of differences. And it's Herbert West is the main character in, I think it's even called Herbert West Reanimators, the story. And it's all about him. And I don't even know if the narrator is ever even named, but it's essentially the Dan character in this. as med students stealing bodies and going through and all the whole process of reanimating and how they'll come back in very violent ways and murder people, the reanimated corpses. And so that's there. And Stuart Gordon also did another Lovecraft movie called From Beyond.
Okay.
Which is, it's very similar in tone and just like gross, crazy special effects. And it's funny because Lovecraft is so known for this sort of unknowable horror and things that just can't be described. And it's, I don't know if I would describe it as like subtle, but it's this dread. There's a sense of dread to it. And this movie has a lot more in common with Evil Dead than something like Lovecraft wrote. So it's interesting in that regard, in that it's based on that. And clearly the fact that Stuart Gordon has made one, at least two, maybe three movies based on Lovecraft books. And yet does such an insane, crazy thing and takes it in his own way.
Right. I was really surprised to read that it was based on Lovecraft. I've not ever really read much Lovecraft. I know about him. I know, you know, basically I think of Cthulhu and things with tentacles. You know, my knowledge on Lovecraft isn't great, but this just didn't fit in with what I thought
right.
it was going to be, having read that. So that was interesting.
They were apparently going to make it set in kind of the early 1900s, which is period that Lovecraft wrote, but they didn't have the budget to make it, make all these elaborate sets and go for this sort of period piece. So they had to set it in modern times.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely you were talking about all like the crazy things that he does with the special effects and kind of the gross out horror, which I think is definitely the best part of it. And I know we've watched a lot of movies over the years on this podcast that kind of fall into that category, and some better than others, like The Thing. Obviously The Thing is a great movie just for what it is, and then on top of it there's these crazy special effects. I think Hellraiser was another one that I always think of, with just sort of like the gross, and you've always said in the past how it would be so fun to work in horror just because you get to do that kind of stuff. And I think that's you can definitely tell in this movie that they were just having a ball making these disgusting, you know, blood splattered corpses and the disgusting things that they did. And it does, it really looks like a lot of fun.
And this one in particular, for such a small budget, I think it was less than $1 million. There's a lot of cheap stuff. I mean, the shots of the head in the pan. There's so many times where the camera is up far enough that they don't have to show the whole body. And you're just like, okay, I know that there's a human body below the frame in this shot. But it adds sort of a fun, cheap campiness to the movie. Yeah. And again, I mentioned Evil Dead. I think just in terms of tone, I think they embraced the fact that they were low budget and had to kind of make the most of what they had. And they kind of said, let's just make this sort of insane.
Yeah.
And
well, and it's interesting because it's listed when you look for it on Amazon or wherever you might be looking for it, it's categorized as a horror comedy, which it's not hilarious.
No.
But the tone is, I mean, I could see where they're getting that for the tone. Again, when you were talking like Evil Dead is more of a straight up horror than this, whereas Army of Darkness veers well into the horror comedy.
Yeah.
I didn't find this to be hilarious, but I could see that they were not taking themselves seriously, if that's what you mean by horror comedy. But
I think it's, I mean, there's not a lot of jokes.
Right.
In my mind, it's more, I mean, like you said, Army of Darkness is, it's not even horror. It's just insane comedy with skeletons and demons. But Evil Dead 2 is sort of this middle ground between the original Army of Darkness, where there's not a ton of jokes in, I feel like, Evil Dead 2.
Right. It's not silly like Army of Darkness is.
It's more these moments. I remember our frequent guest, Dan, who I may have mentioned this before. We were at a Halloween party, and we were all trying to decide what movie to watch, a scary movie. And Dan and I ultimately chose Evil Dead 2, and we were the only two laughing. And I remember specifically the part where the woman is looking down in the cellar. Mm-hmm. And just the fountain of blood is hitting her in the face. Yeah. And we were both dying and nobody else was laughing. And I feel like there's a lot of that in this movie, where it's not a specific, like, goofy, jokey line. Mm-hmm. But it's just Jeffrey Combs, who plays West, throwing a dead cat across a room.
That whole scene with the cat was... what cracked me up with that was... It was so low budget that they couldn't even like afford like a cat puppet, right? Because basically it's the three of them just like looking around the room going, there's the cat over there, and the camera would kind of pan over and they, no, it's over there, and they just kept looking around and you like very rarely see the cat. It was done very humorously, but overall I would say, and I know it's hard with a movie like this, especially with a low budget, they want to save a lot of those goopy effects for the end of the movie, and it certainly made the last half hour a lot more fun, but boy, the first hour of it is kind of boring. Like, I didn't get a whole lot out of the characters as much. There was the cat stuff, and certainly Jeffrey Combs. Is it Combs or Combs? Combs?
I think it's Combs.
Combs. He's so oddly creepy that he's very interesting.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was a little rough. I don't know. I just found it a little boring.
So
up until the end.
So Wes Combs basically, I think, is the best part of that first hour or so, because he's such an odd presence.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell is a legend, and sure, I don't think anyone will touch him in terms of just his, as an icon of horror, just in his specific area of the sandbox,
basically. Yeah.
But there's a little bit of that, I think, to Combs in terms of just creating a very specific, weird character.
Okay.
And I think it's the way he looks. I think it's the cadence of how he talks that I think is very interesting. But yeah, there's not a ton. I'm trying to think of when the first kind of horrific thing comes in. And it may be when he and Dan, well, I guess the cat stuff.
Yeah, the cat stuff, and then there's that part where they go to the morgue.
The morgue. And that's pretty good, where there's just the giant man who ends up killing the dean.
Right, yeah. And again, it's not bad. I just, with what a reputation for insanity this movie had, I kept waiting for it to get really nuts. And by the end, it really does. And that's fine. I mean, it's the pacing of the movie. There's nothing wrong with that. I just was, maybe I had my hopes built up that it was going to be more insanity than it was. And I mean, when it hit, it was definitely there. But
I think it has enough moments. And this is just me, and I've seen it a few times, and maybe I'm not picking up on the subtle details of Reanimator. Right. But there's certain things that strike me as I go through. Mm-hmm. And the movie starts with him in, is it a Swiss hospital or a German hospital?
I think it's German.
German.
Whatever it is, or maybe it's, it doesn't matter.
And the guy he's reanimating, who was his, I think, professor or mentor, has like the bursting out eyes.
Yeah.
Starts in a
crazy... that opening scene's pretty good. And did you catch the name of his mentor?
I did.
Yeah, Hans Gruber. I don't...
This was before Die Hard, right?
This is 85. When the hell was Die Hard? I think it was before. Yeah, Die Hard was 88. Now, I know Die Hard was based on a book, but I don't know if the villain in the book was named Hans Gruber or if they pulled that from this. I don't know. I'd be interested to know that one. But I think it's interesting about... Now, again, I'm not as well-versed in horror, especially sort of classic or cult horror as you are. But I've heard other podcasts where these guys are super into it. And they talk a lot about these different actors who basically have built a whole career out of being in low-budget horror movies. And certainly Jeffrey Combs has popped up in other things. I remember seeing him in The Frighteners. I don't know if you ever saw that, but he was had another... just really bizarrely frightening presence in that.
It's been a while since I've seen it. Didn't he play the villain?
I think so. He was, I don't remember a lot about that movie, but I remember enjoying it at the time. And I think he was sort of the, I don't know if he was the absolute villain or if there was somebody else, but he certainly was not good in it. And Barbara Crampton, who is in this movie, apparently has done almost nothing but horror.
Yeah. I mean, she was in another movie we've done, You're Next.
That's right.
She was the mom.
And I think it's really funny how they make this, almost have this little life in horror outside of mainstream Hollywood and have done very well. And again, I don't know. I mean, they're not living like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, but I mean, Barbara Crampton has worked steadily since the early 80s doing this stuff, and that's fantastic.
If you went to like a horror convention, if Barbara Crampton had a table there, it would just be swarmed with people.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, these other guys I heard on a podcast are the kind of guys who go to those things and line up with their Reanimator posters to have Barbara Crampton sign them. And
yeah,
you know, and it's just, it's really interesting that the life these guys have taken on. So
so I mentioned From Beyond, another Stuart Gordon movie. She was in that one. I think Jeffrey Combs was in that one as well. She was also in Chopping Mall, where security robots in a mall chase after teenagers and kill them.
I know you've told me about that. That's really funny. And then, Jeffrey Combs was in a movie called Fortress, starring Christopher Lambert, directed by Stuart Gordon, about a futuristic prison. I could swear to God I've seen this movie, and I can't remember anything about it or how in the world I would have come across it. But as I was looking through Stuart Gordon's filmography, I was like, hey, there's Fortress. How have I seen that?
You should probably watch that.
It sounds like something we should watch. Have you seen much else that Stuart Gordon has done?
I've seen From Beyond. I saw a movie called Castle Freak. And he wrote Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Well, did he write the original one?
He wrote the original one.
Really? Because I've noticed that he had done some directing on some sort of a TV show they had related to that in the late 90s. I didn't realize that he was involved in the first one.
Yeah, he wrote the first one.
And our frequent guest, Jason, is always trying to get us to watch Robot Jocks, which is another movie of his that I think we got to do pretty soon.
That seems like a Jason movie, like something really that was on regular rotation in their house.
I like that the names that they come up, like the was it Miskatonic Med School?
Yeah,
and the town of Arkham, Massachusetts, which, you know, obviously don't exist but sound very Lovecraftian.
They are from Lovecraft.
Oh, are they directly from Lovecraft?
Yeah. Okay. So I think in the story Reanimator, they go to Miskatonic University, and Arkham is like the location of a lot of his stories. It's like,
okay.
I was going to say Gotham, which
right.
strangely has Arkham Asylum, which is clearly a reference to that. Yeah, so those are from...
Or kind of like Derry, Maine, and from Stephen King.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. What else about this movie before we start talking about the good stuff?
I'm trying to think of the stuff that I like in the first... There's just some random shit. I like the security guard who's really bad at his job and just, like, is flipping through, like... Isn't he flipping through like a dirty magazine?
I think so. He's reading something weird. I can't remember what it was. But...
And then just like getting up and leaving and being like, all right, you got this, Dan. You're fine. You're with that weird freak.
Oh, man.
I'm jumping towards the end. We're into spoilers here. Where he like... It's in the big climax and the door is open and I think a head gets flung out into the hallway and the security guard just like walking by and he kind of like looks in frightened and just takes off.
Yeah.
See him again.
Oh man. Well, so there's the whole thing with the dean, and so the Barbara Crampton was the daughter of the dean, right?
Yeah.
And she's dating Dan, who's sort of our inroads to this story. He's sort of the straight man who gets pulled into it with Jeffrey Combs. But then there's the guy who, well, I forget what was his name. Was it Hill?
Yeah,
Hill,
the professor.
Yeah, he's the professor who's super creepy. Creeping on Barbara Crampton.
Oh, he's so weird. What he says something real strange, just like talking about how she's like a beautiful, talented young woman. You're just like, oh, you are so old.
In that voice. And it's so interesting that at this day and time they still had a lot of just not progressive views on women. I mean, you still have a scene in this where the dean and Dr. Hill discuss who his daughter should be dating and, you know, saying, oh, this, you know, she's hanging out with that Dan and, you know, you have to get her away from him as, you know, and it's just kind of, I don't know, it just didn't sit well with me. Just that idea of a dad sitting around deciding who his daughter's going to date and discussing it with his colleagues and them putting their two cents into it. It's just kind of not the kind of stuff you would see anymore.
Right. Oh,
but it turned out to be the nicest thing that happened to her in the whole movie.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think this helped women's rights in any way. I mean, as you were saying that, I was like, wait, you had a problem with that?
Well, let's talk about my biggest problem with the movie. And I knew that it was coming. Mm-hmm. Very famously, there's the scene where, and I always heard about it, that there was a reanimated severed head that goes down on a woman. And that's how I'd always heard it put.
Yeah.
And so I was prepared for that level of insanity, but I thought it was going to be, I guess,
tasteful.
As if that's possible.
I know. I'm just.
I guess the word I would go for is consensual. I thought it was a thing where a woman was like maybe like a weird creepy lady who was into all this, and so when they had her like tied down, stripped naked on this table, and he starts like, I hate to even say it, but licking her nipples, and just the things that they were doing to her, I was like, I actually was like, I'm not okay with this movie. And that's when it struck me that I was like, why is this listed as a comedy? Like, and again, the looking at it through the eyes of somebody watching it in 1985 and the eyes of today, where we're in the middle of the Me Too era, and you know, it just struck me as so off that I actually kind of turned on the movie, because I enjoyed the silliness of it up to that point and the gushy effects, but it really was off-putting. I hate to say it, but
it's weird speaking in these terms just because of the absurdity of what is happening. But the nipple thing, I had sort of forgotten that she was completely nude.
Yeah.
And that in particular, because it is actually happening. The other thing is clearly like not actually happening. It's not
right. And they take the head and kind of push it, and it stops before anything actually happens. So it was, in that way, it was less graphic than what I thought I was about to be put through.
Right.
Thank God.
It's a little bit. The way I see it, mm-hmm, is it's not good. It's not nice to see. It reminds me a bit of Evil. I keep going back to Evil Dead, but the original Evil Dead gets a lot of flack for a scene where a woman is essentially raped by a tree.
Right.
And Evil Dead was probably this year, or
yeah, it was probably around this time,
84, 85, somewhere around then. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a push in the early to mid 80s for sort of this exploitative, just absurd, pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
And so I, again, maybe having seen it a few times and having sort of that context to it, it's not that I sit there and enjoy that. I feel very uncomfortable with it. But I know that the filmmakers were these low-budget splatter filmmakers who were going for, like, a shock. And not that that makes it okay to do, but I don't know. I guess it's
understandable in the context of what it was and what they were doing. And again, obviously, it's not a snuff film. I mean, Barbara Crampton was an adult. She knew what she was doing, and she, you know, and that's fine. I mean, it's not that much different than watching pornography, though. So to sell it as, I don't know, there's something about selling sexual assault as a comedy that still, even back then, I would have been like scratching my head going, are you guys really calling this that? But I don't know. I mean, it's just that aspect of it, I think, got to me watching this. And again, I did not grow up watching this movie. This is the first time I've seen it, so I'm looking at it through a totally different set of eyes.
Yeah.
Not very fun eyes, apparently, but you know what I mean. It's just, right. I mean, I get what they were doing, and I get why it's been, a campy cult classic for all these years, because who would have thought that you would see a movie where this happens with a guy's severed head? I mean, it's so unbelievably ridiculous that you're just kind of like, okay, I get that, you know, that this is just silly. It's not like watching, you know, if you were to watch a Monty Python and the Holy Grail and say, this isn't accurate to history, I don't like it. Right. You know, I mean, it sort of falls into the vein of that. They're not trying to do anything other than just be like, look at how ridiculous this is. But,
and I totally understand what you're saying, but I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah,
it is sort of a look how insane this is type thing. I was this time more cognizant, and maybe it's because I have two young girls. As I was watching this, the nipple thing, going back to that, in that particular, I was like, and that's not what it's known for.
Right.
I was like, ah, this feels gross, but I don't know. It just made that, it made Dr. Hill that much worse, Chris. Yeah,
he was a stupid mustache twirling villain. The rest of the zombies going around were pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
There was, I didn't understand, was Hill telepathically communicating with them?
I kind of forget how that all, I mean, none of that makes sense. But he's, it seems like he's essentially in charge of the zombies. But do they turn on him?
I think so, because there was something, there was a lot of details of it that I weren't adding up to me, but he did some kind of surgery on them and then he could control them, but he had lobotomized her father.
Yeah.
When he was a zombie, but then I don't know if that allowed him to then have more free will, and didn't he turn on him as well? I can't remember.
He did. I feel like Barbara Crampton was like trying to rationalize with her dad, and he sort of started having like memories and human emotions about her.
Yeah.
And then he turned on, oh, he turned on Hill, didn't he?
I think so.
And ultimately killed him.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of, what was the zombie one that we watched with Bub? Was it Bub the Zombie?
Yeah, Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead, okay. It reminded me a little bit of him, where you were like almost had this feeling that there was some sort of humanity left in there that was trying to creep back out. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, a little bit. He starts to find a little bit of who he was before he came a zombie. So, you know, right. Some real world stuff. Yeah, okay, I wrote it down. The dean crushes his head and then tosses it out as the security guard walks
by. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's that moment. I like the shot of, it's kind of in silhouette of the dean being ripped apart, and you just see like all his body parts coming loose. There's just a lot of fun things in that final scene. The head being crushed, the intestines of the torso coming out and choking. Choking Jeffrey Combs, who seemingly dies. I know there's been like sequels to this.
Yeah, have you ever seen any of them?
I haven't seen any of them. I imagine they're pretty shitty, but
yeah.
I like that at the end of this one, you're sort of led to believe that he's dead.
Right. Does he come back in the sequels?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. because then at the end, so Barbara Crampton died, right? Isn't that how it ended? And then Dan gives her the stuff and it kind of cuts to black and you hear her screaming.
Yeah.
So that's a fun horror
ending. Yeah, it's a good way to end it, I think. Yeah. I don't know if she comes back or Dan comes back in the sequels. I like that the serum looks like Ecto Cooler. If anybody remembers what that is.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if he was in any of the sequels. Let's see.
Who, Dan?
Yeah, or Herbert West.
Oh, he was definitely in the follow-ups, I think.
Okay, he was. Because wasn't... Now, yeah. Yeah, I wonder if Dan was. It doesn't matter.
Dan's pretty boring.
Let's see. Yeah, he was pretty bland. But that's what's sort of his job.
Yeah. He almost has like a...
Oh, he is, yeah.
He has kind of a C-minus level Bruce Campbell look about him.
Okay.
Without the chin.
I could see that.
But he's just... He's... Like you said, he plays a role that he needs to, but there's just not a lot of life to him that you could see, like, oh, this guy's going to be a horror icon.
Yeah. But again, I think he did some other horror... It looks like he was in Bride of Reanimator.
Okay.
He looks like maybe a slightly more handsome Ken Marino.
Oh, God. I love Ken Marino.
I do, too. Ken Marino's so great.
You've made me feel bad that I like this movie.
I know, and I hate this because this is supposed to be fun and upbeat, but Jesus Christ. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I don't want, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have enjoyed this movie their whole life, and they, you know, probably have a better understanding of it than I do. And I don't mean to bring everybody down, but I don't know. I just,
It's... So I think about watching, I'm thinking of exploitation movies, and there's like the Foxy Brown, blaxploitation movies, and then there's just like some fucked up stuff like I Spit on Your Grave or Cannibal Holocaust that are just like these depraved, just horrific fucking shit. Or I watched a movie recently called The Nightingale.
Okay.
Did I talk to you about this?
I don't think so.
And it's directed by the woman who made The Babadook.
Oh.
Which is...
Yeah, I did hear about this and I wanted to see it.
Yeah. And The Babadook's a great movie. And The Nightingale is very, very good. But there's some stuff in it that is just like incredibly hard to watch.
Okay.
And in terms of tone, it's obviously very different than Reanimator. It doesn't sell itself as a comedy. It's very much like a dark historical drama with a lot of horror elements. But and so maybe I've just sunken so low seeing certain things that I'm like, oh, this is headless corpse assaulting this woman. Not so bad.
Yeah, that's pretty... The bar is set pretty low for all of us in this country anymore.
Which makes me feel so terrible.
Yeah, it's like Dr. Hill could probably run for president. And they could just sweep that under the rug. Yeah, sure, his decapitated head sexually assaulted a woman, but
as long as he's got good.
But are you better off now than 4 years?
Oh God.
Oh Jesus.
Now I'm so sad.
I'm so sorry. Literally, as I was watching this movie, I thought, like, that part came up, and I just thought, oh, shit, this podcast is going to take a real turn. Can't not talk about it. It's like the whole thing the movie's known for. And I was very surprised. I read a book by Chuck Palahniuk, I believe is how you say his name, who wrote Fight Club, that involves a group of people who are in hell. And there is a scene where somebody, it's very similar to this. Well, anyway, there's a scene where a demon woman is going to harm some people, and she's satiated by a guy's severed head doing this to her. You all get the point. And I think because I'd read that, that's what I was expecting, that it was more of a, like, everybody's in on this kind of thing. So that's what really threw me off, is I think my expectations were way off.
Okay. Like, all parties are in on this.
Yeah, like a consensual, like, I don't even know what I was picturing, but I know there's these other, wasn't there a woman that was a demon in Hellraiser, or I think of, and I haven't really seen all of the Chucky movies, but I think of Jennifer Tilly seems to be in on things with Chucky. You know, I pictured sort of like a gothic, like, demon woman being like, yeah, but get it in here. And so when it was not that, I was very disturbed.
I'm very sorry I had you watch this.
It was a learning experience for me.
Our next... I was going to say our next two films in the coming weeks are going to be much better, but one of them involves fly abortion.
Well, and even one of them, there's a very sexual element to the other one. It's not quite like this, but...
I mean, we've done Sleepaway Camp, where a young teenager is murdered by having a curling iron shoved up her. So don't get all high and mighty on us.
Oh, God. Okay, well.
Maybe Barbara Crampton makes it out the other side. Oh, wait, yeah, no, she doesn't. She's dead.
She dies. Well, they reanimate her, apparently. So.
But she isn't even killed by that guy. She's just killed by some other elevator zombie. Let's talk about how Dan just takes off down the hall and leaves her for seemingly like 20 minutes.
Yeah, this movie was something else. So I will say I'm glad that I watched it. And I'm being a little tough on it, I think. I'm glad that I watched it, so I can say I've watched Reanimator.
No, you're not.
I got nothing else that can't sugarcoat it anymore.
That's on the poster. I'm glad I watched Reanimator, so I can say I've watched Reanimator.
5 stars. Oh, God. Well, do you have anything else on Reanimator, now that I've ruined everybody's day?
I like this movie.
Good.
It's got some screwed up stuff, but lot of the movies we've watched have had some kind of screwed up. Well, maybe not on here. A lot of the movies I've seen in my life have had some screwed up stuff.
This is the one he's going to show to his 4-year-old daughter. This is like Sesame Street to Rob with all the shit he watches.
All right, you can't watch The House with the Clock in Its Walls, but let's pop in Reanimator.
How do you feel about nipple licking?
What if it's bloody?
That's the worst part of it, the blood. Oh my God, this fucking movie.
But the Merkin work on this movie is A+. I think it got an Oscar.
Swept the murkies.
Your joke beats mine.
Oh my God. It's so gross. Oh my God. All right. I don't think
we have on Twitter else. At 2 Geeks Movies.
Thank you.
Let's just jump into it. We're on Facebook where you can like us. You can find us in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Let's wrap it up.
Yes, please, God. We'll have another good. What are we going to do next week?
The Fly.
The Fly. Listen for The Fly next week, and we will catch you next week on 2 Geeks at the Movies.
Bye, folks.
Bye.